SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, hour two on this Thursday. That means Tony Black got to spend time with Tony at Philly on Saturday, and plenty to talk to him about. And that includes something that he had basically given you all a clue about, which was the reticence of the stewards in the booth in Philadelphia to turn on the inquiry light. And we'll get Tony's view of what transpired in the cotillion, and more about the other portion of it, how the stewards view incidents. But first, Tony, another great Saturday at Parks, another great Pennsylvania Derby day. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, it was a great day. I'll tell you what, anytime you go walking through the grandstand and clubhouse and you got to watch where you're going because there's so many people there, that's a great day. It brought back a lot of memories of what racing, the way they used to pack these grandstands and clubhouses. So it was a fun day.
Very much. And you, of course, and Barry Pearl, the jockey in jeans pairing, and you guys were out, you were pressing the flesh, you were working the rooms.
Yeah, Barry's really good at going out there and giving the people a heads up on what the PDJF does and what Jockeys and Jeans does, and he's a good promoter. In fact, he's one of the originators of Jockeys and Jeans with a few other older retired riders. You know, it's a great worthy cause, and it's an honor to be called an ambassador of Jockeys and Jeans. You know, I was getting on horses and just got off my last horse, and I missed the first hour. I'm sorry, but I had to get on horses, and I even got on my favorite horse, Collegeville Girl, and she went real nice. You know, she's coming back, making her comeback on the scene after that minor injury.
Well, and we're looking forward. I imagine that they're looking maybe at those October. The October New York Bred Day, the next Big Apple showcase probably for her as a chance to get that stakes win. And we really have not seen another filly among the two, you know, the two-year-old fillies, the New York Breds, that is better than her. So we'll look forward to that and hope that Richie and the ownership team gets their chance. That was really a frustrating scene when she got hurt in the gate, cut her leg open and had to scratch. So we're rooting for her. Tony, let's talk about Saturday. And for starters, before we talk about the stewards and their failure to throw on the inquiry light, we'll take that as a separate topic. First of all, your impression of what went on out there, and Florent Giroux basically doing all he could to impede Midnight Bisou and Mike Smith.
Yeah, you know what? It was really two incidents. You know, one with the crossing over, and then one with the herding. I think if either one just occurred, the stewards maybe would have had the opportunity to leave it as they finished, leave it up. But when you combine the two incidents where he does cross over and he is just clear, you know, clear with just clear, and that can be considered a little bit of an intimidating situation. And then the herding, which was pretty obvious, I also looked at the head-on pretty good. You can see where his horse was getting out to some degree. Now, to what degree he tried to correct it maybe was not to the utmost. It was minimal, you know. He did have her head cocked in a little bit as she was herding out, but was it enough to keep her straight? Obviously not. You know, the film shows she kept going out, and Mike was on the outside. He chose to go to the outside. when she did cross over close, the close crossover. Yeah, my opinion of the thing was initially, and still feel, the Stewarts made the only decision that was, to me, considered the correct decision. Both incidents caused the disqualification. Not one, not the other, but both. Do I look at the race and say, well, she was going to, the horse that was put up was going to win? I don't think she was going to win anyway. I really don't. I think she wasn't going to get past. But you have to give her the full opportunity to get past, and she wasn't afforded that opportunity. You know, she was compromised by the moves of Monomoy Girl. You know what even makes the situation even more of a negative, because they took Monomoy Girl down? I was reading an article where they can't really give an explanation of why the two horses were not connected as an entry. And that's a double whammy, because now, even if she was taken down and part of connected as an entry, the payoff would have been the same to the public. So the public got a double whammy, the way I look at it, unless they can come up with some really good explanation, a commission or Stewart, of why she wasn't connected as an entry. So, you know, it's kind of a double whammy there, I think, Steve.
Well, I haven't really even thought about that portion, the common ownership, which is basically Sol Kumin, despite, are they both, I don't think, let me think for a second. He had, of course, the Monomoy stable on Monomoy Girl. I think it was Mattaquette. I'll go check, actually, now that you say that.
They say he's a principal owner in both.
He's principal. He's not the principal of Midnight Bisou. Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing, is the majority owner. And typically when you talk about stakes races that have for the most part moved to individual entrants. I mean, just for and frankly, I'm all for it. I don't buy the whole entry, concept when it comes to this. I think everybody's better off being able to bet on, even if there is common ownership, bet on the horse that you want to bet on. And,
absolutely. I totally agree. Before you go any further, the public can read the program. They can see if it's a common trainer, common owner. They don't have to have it pointed out by a 1A, 1, 1A, 2, 2B. They're smart enough to see it's a common interest there. And it also increases the betting interest if they're not connected.
Absolutely.
There's no reason to connect. That's an old school traditional thing, and we don't even know why it existed years ago. But there's no purpose to it. The people can read the program. They read the program. They read the PP. They can decide a bit and decipher that. Oh, boy, this is a same owner. And what difference does it make if it's the same owner or the same trainer with two different owners? I mean, it's bull. It's total bull. Entries serve no purpose. In the lottery, they don't give you two numbers and say, oh, if it's the one and the three, we'll give you the one and the three. No matter which one is a hit, you'll be a winner. The two for one thing, that's BS.
Well, and these were two separate, Monomoy, and as it happens, we had Sol Kumin on TV at the end of the meet at Saratoga, and I asked Sal, why he had, why there was the breakout like that, and he's got different people with different percentages in each of the head of planes, Monomoy and Mattaquette, etc. So Mattaquette is involved with Midnight Bisou, and Jeff Bloom has the largest share. He's the principal owner, and Michael Dubb is the principal owner in Monomoy Girl, and Monomoy is second, and Elkstone and Bethlehem are next. So to me, this is even a this keeps coming up about Kumin's various ownership entities and his involvements. But I didn't even think about that as a other than the situation that Saul was going to be in the photograph, no matter who got put up or whether Monomoy stayed up. It didn't matter. He was going to be in the picture.
He got his picture taken in a $1 million race.
Exactly.
I'm sure he's not upset about it. But, you know, when you think about it, entries don't serve any purpose, and they're ridiculous connecting these horses, especially in a time in racing where you need to increase field size and have separate entities.
Tony, before we talk and you reiterate and explain again, you know, what, you know, your experiences with the stewards and why they are so slow to put the inquiry light on there themselves, one more pass at the concept. I heard a lot of people and I read people on the internet say, oh, there was no contact. Explain further why there doesn't need to be any contact. And just because you're in front, you don't, that doesn't give you a free pass to use every path on the racetrack.
Yeah, it doesn't. But here's what I've gotten from the stewards, maybe not this particular group, but it seems to be what they do in Pennsylvania, and I've gotten this exact explanation of why they don't throw up the inquiry sign, which means it's ridiculous. There was other groups of stewards there. We've had a zillion different stewards. And they say, well, we don't want to alarm the public. We don't want to alarm the public. I thought, that's ridiculous. I said, it's an inquiry. It doesn't mean anything, but you're looking at it. That's why it's called inquiry. Well, we're not going to do that. This was another group of stewards. And they, I used to say, but yeah, but when you have an obvious situation, throw the inquiry up. Well, we don't want to make riders feel like that, you know. We don't want to have the inquiry put up because it might initiate frivolous claims of foul by riders. I said, that's even more ridiculous than you don't want to alarm the public. Riders know when they're getting bothered. Riders, some of them are better actors than others, and they grandstand better. But there's always usually an incident that occurs. And if a rider does create frivolous claims of foul, which you think are time-consuming and an inconvenience to the public, fine him. Believe me, you fine riders, they stop doing that. But in all the years that I've been riding, I've only witnessed, you know, few handfuls of frivolous claims of foul because some rider was, showboating and making it look like he got bothered. You don't see that. You know, when it comes to incidents and the public says, oh, there's no contact. No, that doesn't have to be contact. When you are causing a horse to change course because, let's say in this case, you crossed over, you were just clear, it's kind of intimidating to the horse behind that you cut it so close. Now, the argument is, well, I was just clear. All right, so then that job changed course. But then when he changed course, now where you came in, you're causing your horse or letting your horse get out. Do you realize the further out you take that horse, the harder and the further he has to run to get around you? You're not giving him a fair shot to get around you. You don't have to make contact. It's called herding. There doesn't have to be contact, but you are causing that horse on the outside of you to have to run further and faster to get around you. He's not having the equal opportunity to get to the wire in front as you were getting to the wire in front if you were running straight. Now, other people say, oh, yeah, but the inside horse is getting out, too. Yeah, but he's controlling the situation. The inside horse is coming out, and he knows how far out he's gone, and he is actually controlling the situation and knows exactly what he's doing on his horse. The rider behind him has to guess what he's doing, and it causes the rider behind him to react in a way that is not as controlled as the horse in front controlling the situation. He has to guess how far you're coming out. The outside horse has to pull out and try to give himself space to get around you. It's hurting. It's intimidating. It's hurting. It's not a fair way to do it. Now, I had some, of course, people say, oh, Black, we watched you and Rick Wilson and some of you guys ride. You do that every day. I says, no, we don't do that every day. You know, we when we have done it to that degree, we got our numbers taken down. What we would do is make, like, where the rider would see a rider coming to the inside well before he got there, you would maybe cross over. You look back, you cross over. He's not on your heels. And you made him come out and around, right? Okay, but you did it smoothly. When he came out and around, you maybe stayed and held your ground where he, and twisted ever so slightly just to make him think you were going to keep coming out. But you didn't keep coming out. You know, I always had this saying, I want them to go where I've already been. But it isn't to the degree that we saw that disqualification on Saturday. That was crossing the line. And when you go that far, you come down. He crossed over closely. Maybe he'd have got away with it. But after he crossed over, then he started getting out. And his horse was getting out a little bit. If you look at the head on, Steve, you'll see the horse's head is cocked in. Is it cocked in enough to keep him straight? No, he could have done more. But, you know, that's my opinion, and that's somebody that's done a lot of things right and a lot of things wrong. I've crossed over the line of what is acceptable and got my number taken down on occasion. Most of the time you try to keep it within the rules of racing. That crossed the line.
Well, and this is a weird thing. I mean, I know that there's a number of I would say a big number, obviously, of players that don't bet parks on a regular basis. But when you have an incident like this that was so clearly, I mean, even on the pan, you know, it's one thing when you're watching the pan shot and there's an incident that is much tougher to discern. You know, you might see a rider kind of, you know, their shoulders kind of go up, or you might see them check up, and you may see if you're watching the distance, if you're watching the spacing between the rail and the horses, you know, sometimes you'll see that and you'll see a widening gap, and you'll realize that, you know, a horse is getting out and a horse may be hurting. It's not easy on the pan shot. Some people are more attuned to it and see it clearly, without the head on. But in a case like this, it's ridiculous that they would be hesitant to put on the inquiry light. And all it's going to do, Tony, is inhibit people from playing the circuit. I mean, they already have strikes against them with an onerous takeout rate on their multi-race wagers. It really only further intimidates or, you know, keeps people away if you're not going to police the races properly.
Absolutely. I mean, the takeout rate is ridiculous. They've done nothing to adjust that. And there's nothing wrong with throwing Stewart's Inquiry signs up. I totally disagree with what they do or don't do when it comes to that. It's just something that's been a mentality that has gone from Stewart's stand to Stewart's to Stewart's, and we've had several different ones, you know. It's a mentality that shouldn't exist. I've ridden it at many a different racetrack, even though I'm considered like, oh, well, you just rode there because you're third rate. I rode in Chicago at Arlington. Is that third rate racing? I rode in Delaware. I rode in Maryland and stayed at these tracks. You know, didn't just come in, ship out. You know, rode meets at these tracks. And when I witness things of this nature happening anyplace else, right away the inquiry sign goes up. Listen, I rode in the Vosburgh against Angel Cordero, and we were out there not crossing the line, but taking advantage of each other the most we could. I rode a horse called My Juliet. He rode a horse called Bold Force. Leaving the gate, we did a number on each other. Going into 3/8 pole, we kind of got each other's attention. Coming to the head of the stretch, took him out a little bit, but not enough to where it was, totally flagrant in my, it wasn't totally ridiculous the way I did it. He claimed foul against me. Guess what? The number stayed up. In fact, They actually took him down because leaving the gate, he bothered a horse because it's freezing. So he got paid. He bothered leaving the gate. And I'll never forget when we were walking in the gate, he said, "You keep that horse straight leaving there, John." You know, as a little kid, kind of 1976, only been riding 6 years. He was a superstar. And he bothered, it's freezing leaving the gate, and got taken down. And I did my number on him the way, but to the degree that was acceptable. You know, you wanted to be on the inside, I didn't want you to be there. I made you come around, and I parked you a little bit. But you know, when you do things like that, going into the three-ace bowl, someplace into the turn, and a lot of times the camera angle doesn't pick up exactly on what you're moving your horse around on the turn. Especially in the 70s, the camera angles maybe weren't as good as what they are now. But, you know, we do things to each other to compromise and take advantage of each other. But when you're coming down the stretch, that's visible to the viewing stewards by binoculars and the two that are watching the video. You know, it's right at the one point where you don't want to do things like this. If you can make your horse go in as Laurent made the horse go in and make Mike come around, then you can, when he is getting out a little bit, now you just made this horse go in, you can keep Monomoy Girl straighter through the lane. And I don't believe Mike's horse is going to get past him anyway. I really don't. It just looked like he had plenty of time to still get past him, but wasn't. The only thing Mike Smith's horse could have done that would have really made me think, what a competitor, and she certainly is a competitor, is if she would have reached across and bit him, like we saw in the Gallant Bob. That horse wasn't going to get past the eventual winner, but he at least showed his competitiveness and reached over and bit his competition. Was that an interesting and a beautiful shot? And it just shows you how much these horses love to run and how competitive there was. That horse was saying, "Listen, I might not beat you, but you're going to know I was here." That was such a great shot where a horse reached over and grabbed the other horse momentarily.
No, absolute. In fact, I don't think this has ever come up with you on that, because I want to ask you about the Derby too, and of course Baffert sending out his third Pennsylvania Derby winner in 5 years. But on the front, it's funny. Jason Service, I think, was really kind of amused to be involved in the incident. I talked to him afterward, and he immediately referenced the Tremont. And I've got a great picture of the famous, you know, the famous Bob Coghlan's photo, the Savage, and Georgie Velasquez signed it for me, actually, as it happens. And Jason thought it was pretty amusing. Had you been involved in any, either on a horse that tried to Savage or on a horse that was going by and a foe tried to come at you?
I had one horse that I was on, and he didn't get over to Savage him, but he jerked his head to the left side as if he was, and I jerked the rein right away, and he, you know, he was willing not to go as far as that horse. I've only seen it one other time, and you know, other than seeing profile photos of something like that, you know, historical photos. But I've only had one horse really try to do that. My uncle told me one time he was riding, and I think it was in Jersey, he had a horse reach over and grab his iron, you know, to go Savage. Now, I can't remember if there's any pictures he said of that, but he said he had one horse that was on the outside and reach over, and it went and it caught its iron. Maybe not purposely trying to catch its iron, but he was going to reach over and bite something, and the iron wound up in his mouth, and then he turned it loose. But you don't see that regularly. And I told Jeremy Rose, because him and I are wrestlers from a bygone era, and of course he came up in the room and put a wrestling move on me when he came to, but he had to do it while my back was turned to him. So when I came back after the race, and we always talk about when he rode Fleet Alex and survived the Preakness and didn't hit the ground. I said, only a wrestler could do that, Jeremy. You have to be a wrestler to be able to stay on a horse when they stumble to that degree. And when I came back to the room and saw him that day, I said, "Hey, Jer," I said, "that horse did that in the true spirit of a wrestler." He said, "You're right." He said, "I love that horse." He said, "He's such a hard competitor." I said, well, he wasn't going to get past that horse, but he was going to leave his mark and say, I wasn't getting past you, but you're going to know I was here. That's a true spirit of a wrestler. You know, when we wrestled in high school, you maybe didn't beat the kid or pin him. Well, you maybe didn't pin him, but you sure beat him up during the wrestling match. You wanted him to remember you. And don't you know, I had a guy respond to that. He said to me on Facebook the other day, he said, I wrestled you 48 years ago, he says. You didn't pin me, but you beat me 14 to nothing. You went to half championship and I went to Jerry Hill West. I said, you remember stuff 48 years ago? He says, yeah, it was like, and the exact words on the thing was, it was like a child fighting a man. He says, you were ready to ride and you were built like a rock. And I thought, how do you remember stuff like that? He says, because you gave me a beat and 14 to nothing. Spirit of a wrestler.
That's great. That's great. You know, Tony, and since
camp in Pennsylvania, and I always bring that up. Well, you know, you were truly a wrestler, Jeremy.
I got to ask you another one though before we talk Pennsylvania Derby quickly. Yesterday, Mike Ferraro joined us. The passing of Les Hewlett, and you know, while Hewlett spent the majority of his career up at Finger Lakes, your career's basically, in terms of the timing, paralleled. He was a high school wrestler, a Mormon from Utah, and was an outstanding high school wrestler too, Les Hewlett.
Yeah, you know what? Wrestling is a great introduction to being a jockey because it teaches you physical fitness, perseverance, weight control. And I couldn't have been involved in a better sport in high school. You know, only made it to regions, won districts every year, won the regions, and never quite made it to states. And then those days you had to win regions. It wasn't 1, 2, 3. You had to win. And I finished second in regions, third in regions, and the one kid I beat won states that year. But, yeah, it's a great introduction to being a jockey. And Les Hewlett, you know, starts to... You know, the loss, but wrestling, I hope he had as much success and fun riding as we did wrestling in high school. And it's a great sport, and you know what? Being a jockey is a great, great, great sport for a little guy, 4'11", 110 pounds. It's a great sport.
And, well, did you know Les at all? Did you come across Les Hewlett?
I'm sure our paths have crossed, and we've been in jocks rooms together, you know, and you recognize people, and you lose contact with so many people because you go to so many different places, or they wind up someplace where you're not. But you know the name for sure, and I'm sure we rode against each other, and, you know, and, but you always know the wrestlers, and we call them wrestlers. the grapplers.
There you go.
In high school, you know what? The grapplers, the wrestlers, was the real sport in high school. And the basketball players, they were just the round ballers. We used to call, hey, they're the round ballers. You know, we're in the real sport, wrestling. But I love wrestling. It's the only thing that made me complete my high school education. And it's the one thing that taught me how not to quit something you're supposed to finish. Wrestling.
No. Well, and you came from an area, you know, this area, the Jersey through to, of course, Pennsylvania. It's a mammoth, particularly out to Bethlehem and Lehigh, and you know, here we brought up a Monomoy girl, Mike Caruso, Bethlehem Stables, one of the.
You must be reading my mind. Yeah. I rode for Mike Caruso, and I come downstairs, and he was fit as a fiddle when I rode for him years ago. And he was our idol when we were in high school as a wrestler. And I came downstairs, and I was ready to throw a pancake on him in the paddock. But I showed bad judgment. I was going to pancake him. I said, I'm riding his horse. I better show good judgment and give him a break.
Well... Mike Caruso, and I've mentioned this before, he's been on the show. Mike Caruso went on to a career in the insurance business, but Caruso is widely recognized as Lehigh's greatest wrestler, and he was a three-time NCAA title holder. I believe he went undefeated in, I'm not sure if it's undefeated in both his height, either... either high school or at Lehigh. I believe in his entire schoolboy wrestling career, he was only ever beaten twice in between high school and college. And he's one of the greatest wrestlers in history. Mike Caruso, Bethlehem Stables.
He was our idol when we were in the wrestling match in the late 60s, 66, 67, 68, 69, and 70. He was one of our idols, Mike Caruso. And then I got a chance to ride for him. So I've been blessed.
Well, Tony, last thoughts?
I think I could take him. I might be able to take Mike. I might get a match with him.
Well, he's only a little. He probably was a couple of weight classes ahead above you. He's just a little bit bigger, right?
He was probably in the 23-36 category of weight classes. I was 98 from my freshman year and struggled to stay 98 in my senior year, but I stayed 98. And I only tied one match in my senior year. I weighed in at 98, and my wrestling coach bumped me up to 106 because their 98 pounder was not as good, and it was Southern Regional High School, and he put our 98 pounder in. He made me wrestle 106 against a kid that could wrestle, and I tied him. So I was 32-1-1. The other one I lost, I broke the kid's collarbone. I brought him up off the mat, and he landed kind of flat on the side of his face, and I broke his own collarbone. So I lost by default. I was 32-1-1, and I cried when I lost by default. And I said, that kid could still wrestle. He's faking. And they took him to the hospital. That's all BS. He can wrestle. They took him to the hospital. He was from Eastern Regional. And I was just in the middle school. They took him to the hospital. The next time I saw him, he had a figure eight on for his collarbone because it was busted flat. He said, you did it. That was a good sport. I'll let you go. I know I'm taking up too much of your time.
You're unbelievable.
But I wish the stewards would learn to push the button for the inquiries at Pennsylvania Parks. They got to do it.
Oh, my God. The greatest. Tony Black, everybody. The one and only with another five-star appearance. I love it. Let's take the bottom of the hour break. And I just looked it up. I was off by one. Between high school and college. This is unbelievable. Between high school and college, Mike Caruso, 141-1. He was beaten once between high school and college. And never beaten in a tournament. Ever. Think about that. I mean, that's unbelievable. It's just incredible. And as nice a person as my business partner, Barry Fry, been friends with Mike Caruso forever. Class of 67, when they were the Engineers, they're still the Engineers, the Mountain Hawk nonsense. It just occurred to me, as we go for Steve Haskin, the changing of state names annoys me, and the changing of college mascots annoys me, too. Yeah, I don't get it. Like Binghamton, the Continentals, and now they're what? They're the Bearcats? I mean, it's just idiotic. And my own, my own alma mater, Colgate. I mean, Colgate. You know, were the Red Raiders, like Texas Tech. At some point, the red in Red Raiders was never Indian oriented. It was because of a maroon stripe on the football team's pants is why they were called the Red Raiders. It was never an Indian thing, and yet we had to drop the red a few years ago. Dartmouth, of course, is the one who started all of this when they dropped the Indian for the green. But Lehigh, the Engineers, I guess they didn't want to be thought of strictly as an engineering school, but Mountain Hawks, come on. They're the Engineers. Steve Haskin is next at the races.
The latest- latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Vick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, about 20 minutes to the top of the hour. We'll spend a half hour with Steve Haskin. We've got Tom Quigley and Rich Eng to follow this morning. Kind of a rambling visit with Tony Black. He was on the muscle. Steve Haskin, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'm always rambling, so what's the big deal?
Well, I guess it's kind of the style. I think that's one of the things people like. These conversations are, you know, they're like, you know, sitting down at a picnic table or in the back on the patio of the Friedbergs. It's a conversation about racing. That's what's fun.
That shows how classy you are, by the way, because most people have said it would be like sitting and talking in a bar, but you didn't resort to that. You went to patios and picnics.
Well, that's my mindset, actually. It's that that convivial repartee.
And that's why people love you.
Stop. Steve, I was down in Philadelphia, and you probably might have heard Tony and I, but certainly you've been following along since Saturday afternoon between the cotillion and the kerfuffle, and then Baffert winning another Pennsylvania Derby, McKenzie picking up and expanding from where he left off. Some thoughts about the weekend.
Well, one of these days, you know, Baffert's a good trend. One of these days, he's going to learn how to get a horse ready for fillet off. I mean, it's crazy. You know, that's why when he says, you know, West Coast is 80% for the Austin again, don't believe it.
No, I
you
agree.
Know? I mean, he may be 80%. That doesn't mean he can't win. But, you know, listen, I mean, I thought McKenzie looked terrific. It was... I don't know what these races, to tell you the truth, are saying about the Triple Crown trail this year. I mean the Travers and the Pennsylvania Derby, you know, were both won in impressive fashion by horses who didn't run in any of the Triple Crown races. So I just don't know if a lot of them are just not around. Obviously, Good Magic is retired, and Bravazo is all over the place. You know, you just go back and look at some of the horses, you know, in the Triple Crown, and they really haven't really done anything. So, you know, it's just a whole new wave. I know, you know, we always talk about the second wave, but we really don't have many remnants of the first wave. So, I don't want to say it's an indictment on the. On the competition in the Triple Crown this year, but it was a strange Triple Crown. Let's put it that way. And you know, listen, maybe McKenzie and Catholic Boy just simply are the two best 3-year olds in training right now. I don't think there's anything anybody can debate that, because you got to figure McKenzie's only going to get better, and there's no reason why Catholic Boy is not going to get better. Now, whether they're good enough or fast enough to compete against the older horses, but you know, we really don't know how good the older horses are. We know they're good, but we don't know how good. I was actually surprised that the Pennsylvania Derby got such a high buyer number. It seems to me that horses seem to get higher buyer numbers when they run very slow times on very slow tracks, but when they run very fast times on very fast tracks, they don't get high buyers. I don't understand that, why there isn't sort of a middle ground there. But it just seems like it favors horses running slow.
Well, those two races, in fact, I touched on it for just a minute on Tuesday with Andy, those races... they had to come back fast because of the spread between the top finishers. And when you had horses with very established baselines, Hofburg and Trigger Warning, and let me one more time, I'm one guy that I didn't get to this week was Mike Roan, who I was very pleased that Roan got the grade one placing with Trigger Warning. He hung in like grim death to that third place finish in the Pennsylvania Derby, and good for him. He's been dancing dances, but he and Hofburg made the number very firmly established when you went up to Axelrod and McKenzie. The number absolutely had to be in the low hundreds. I put my own, and I don't do the firm figures, Steve, but you know, I can project. I thought it was going to be a 104, so the 107 I thought was a tick higher than I expected, but I knew it had to be in that range, in the 104 range at the least.
I'm curious because, you know, watching the show, Dick Girardi said that the numbers are going to come back very slow. And Dick Girardi does the buyer numbers.
Yeah, Dick does those numbers. No, he must not have seen...
On TV, he said they were going to come back slow. That's why I was surprised.
Well, he I'm sure when he sat down, he saw what was obvious to any figure maker, that those numbers, when you had you know, that group of horses that had very established form, there was no way. What are we going to say? That okay? Let's say the number was 98 or 100. You're telling me that Hofberg ran a 78? I mean, that's just preposterous. There's no way. Not to mention the other horses that also were behind. And the same thing in the filly race. You had arguably the four most established and well-known 3-year-old fillies in the country. You know exactly what Wonder Gadot is, and so looking at the top two finishers, the numbers had to come back the way they did.
I don't mind that they came back.
It is what it is.
You know, based on what. On what Dick said, and just the way the buyer numbers seem to, you know, like I said, over the years, sort of favor horses that run slow on slow tracks. But if you look at these races, the one thing you'll see in there is that a lot of horses, I think, just again, which happens every year, they just did not like parks. A lot of horses just don't like that surface.
Yep.
And who knows what it's like when it gets that slow. I mean, that's about as slow as I've ever seen it. So when you get a track that's quirky in the first place, and then you get it even 3 seconds slower than it normally would be, then you got a tricky racetrack, and you don't know if the margins between the horses are legitimate or it's because the horses in front like the racetrack and the horses behind hated it. I mean, you know, King Zachary, you know, was a disappointment. Hofberg was a disappointment. Wonder Gadot was a disappointment. I mean, there's a lot of good horses that just did not run their race.
Agreed.
You know, I mean, I don't think, let's put it this way. I think Monomoy Girl hated that racetrack. It's either that or there's something wrong with her, because she looked awful in the stretch. And I'm not even just talking about all the drifting that she did. But the way she was carrying her head, I've never seen her carry her head that high. And she wasn't keeping it straight. She had her head cocked, and she was running with her head held way too high. And she just seemed like a horse that was not enjoying herself and was not handling that racetrack. And I think that, I mean, to me, I look at that more than I look at her drifting. Which she did, obviously, all over the place. So, you know, she was even drifting out to a right-handed whip. So it was just, you know, she just ran a very, you know, untypical Monomoy Girl race. She was always the consummate pro, always ran straight. She looked, you know, always looked great in every race she ran in. But here, even though she finished ahead in front, from a visual standpoint, she looked terrible.
It was odd, and being down inside, you know, it was also an element of that. You don't typically, you know, nobody wants to be down inside. And even I give Giroux a lot of credit, Steve, when he did come off and you know, turning for home, you know, he knew to come out, you know, off the rail. And at that point, he also was trying to invite Mike Smith to go down in there. You know, Tony, earlier in the day, we didn't touch on it actually just now in Tony's visit, but Tony said in the morning when he was galloping horses, he felt that the track was very even. And he said the last, you know, several weeks that the track had been more even than it usually is. I mean, everybody knows that the inside is rarely the place you want to be at Philly. But it is a unique surface. It one of the strangest elements of that track is that it there are days where horses that even run on it regularly will not run well. Gary, I'm going to use Gary as a resource. When he brought Hit It Once More there for the Pennsylvania Derby a couple of years ago, he hated it. He ran terrible. The worst race the horse had ever run. He subsequently has gone back and he's run much better there. It's a surface that is really, Tampa is the closest place I can
exactly
relate.
That's right? What I look at. And also you got to remember the fact too, is that look how good a race Axelrod ran and he had a
twice.
Run, he had the twice. Break, so over
yep.
the racetrack. So
yep. good example. Good point.
It's a lot of times, first time over a racetrack, horses will not run well over it. But after they get that race under them, they'll run better as you know the more they run on it. So, and Axelrod was very impressive when he won the Smarty Jones. And then even though he was second here, he ran even more impressive running second, you know, and finishing far ahead of the third horse. And he ran a heck of a race. I mean, he gave McKenzie a run of it. I'll tell you one thing, McKenzie's a really, as all these Baffert horses are, he is a really classy, really good-looking horse.
Yeah,
he's a very talented horse. I mean, beautiful conformation, classy head, moves well. You know, we really haven't seen a lot of him, but watching him in this race, coming off the layoff, travel cross country, and then run over a racetrack that is like so far different than anything he's ever run on. I don't know how Baffert gets these horses, but I mean every year these horses just are so impressive. They go all over the country, no matter what the racetrack is. You look what this horse has accomplished this year. You look what Justify has accomplished, something that you know no horse has ever accomplished to do what he did in the span of 112 days. You know, and to run on any kind of racetrack like that, slop, mud, fast.
Yeah.
His horses just—they just run.
Now, you know what?
Now take a look at a horse like Collected. Watching that horse, by the way, that horse did not handle that racetrack at all.
Well, let me address that.
The whole way.
It's an interesting. I'm glad you brought him up. Earlier in the day, happened to get a bit of a tip on that front, and you know, John Service horses. You know, John's got that horse, the Pennsylvania bred, the man that he trains for Jill Baffert, and the horses came in, you know, to Service's barn, and what Baffert had said to John in anticipation of Saturday, he said if the track is really heavy, and deep and slow, he said Collected is going to struggle. He told Service that. I mean, and I that was conveyed, and that but that that McKenzie was going to fire and was ready to run no matter what the surface was. So Baffert knows exactly how they're coming in and what to expect. It's amazing.
He never would have sent that horse there in the first place if you just sending him there to accompany McKenzie.
Well, you're working toward a goal. So, you know, you target and what the hell, you got the plane, you're going to go. But he knew that there was a chance that track was, you know, and don't forget they were galloping. They had been galloping over, you know, the leading in. And, Jimmy Barnes is reporting, you know, daily what's going on. And so I think they kind of knew where they were headed in terms of Saturday.
Yeah, you had to feel good for the winner, too. I mean, you know, it's a good story there.
Yeah, it is.
House horse. It's always, you know, it's always nice to see, you know, a local horse run well.
Well, this sets up, obviously, in fact, just the conversation I had with Andy on Tuesday, and it's funny because Andy and I had been talking, and he says that when it's his opinion that generally that when the Baffert horses miss that kind of time, and you know that you got to take a wait and see. But he said, I mean, obviously you're going to look hard at McKenzie. I mean, this was an ideal comeback to set up for Breeders' Cup for him.
Yeah, for Baffert, it worked out. You know, you never like to say a horse's injury works out for the best. But, you know, McKenzie, when he got hurt and allowed Baffert to focus all of his attention to Justify.
That's true, on Justify. That's true.
You know, and now Justify is gone, and now Baffert's able to now turn 100% of his attention to McKinsey, the horse that back in January he thought was going to be, you know, the horse that Justify turned out to be. So it all worked out. It all worked out well for him. He was just able to, you know, his whole year in sections, and just he was always able to devote 100% of his attention to one horse. And now, you know, listen, now McKinsey's got a chance to do some great things. You know, even if he doesn't, even if he's, you know, he's not ready to win, you know, the Classic. You know, I'm sure we'll probably see him in the Pegasus. So by then, he should be peaking. He might be peaking in the Classic. I just don't know how the, you know, a 3 year old running against all the horses has got to be a really, really good 3 year old if he's going to beat them, especially if the older horses have proven to be tough.
Well, on that topic, Steve, let's. In fact, wait, before we do this, I want to look at the three race cards Saturday and get some, you know, we'll jump around, we'll get some opinions from you leading in. But the Gallant Bob winner, Firenze Fire, that can be part of the discussion because they've got a tough decision to make whether they should sprint or whether they should one turn mile in the Breeders' Cup, the dirt mile. But the Savage Attempt has gotten so much play. People, yeah. There's nothing people love more than horses showing how competitive they are. And
exactly.
And
that's what I told Joan. I told, you know, Joan, I brought Joan down there, and I rewound it, and I said, and that's exactly what I told her. I said, listen, anybody who doubts whether horses are competitive and they want to win, I said, just watch this horse. This horse, pardon the expression, was totally pissed when Frenzy Fire came back at him because he looked like he had the race won. And you know, I wasn't sure if he was trying to savage Frenzy Fire, you know, or a tease. I mean, it was wild because he really went after him. He did not want to get beat.
Yeah,
you know, I thought it was terrific. And listen, that Frenzy Fire, you got to give him a lot of credit. I mean, you know, to have a decision like they have now, it's going to be a tough decision. I think a lot of it is going to depend. First of all, I have to see what Catalina Cruz is going to look like going into the dirt mile. I'm not quite sure what the plans are for him, but we'll see what he looks like going into that race, and let's see what happens, you know, in the sprint races, and see how and let's see what happens with Mind Your Biscuits. You know, let's see. You know, if for some reason he should flub against that, you know, that field, then he might start thinking either mile again. Then they have this. Then Summers has the same kind of decision to make. Okay, let's forget about the Classic. Now, do we go all the way back to the sprint, which he was originally, or do we go to the mile? Which, even though he's a he might be probably best at one turn. We don't know if he's a one turn miler. We do know he's a sprinter. But again, how's the sprint going to shape up? You know, we're not going to know. We're not going to know much from the Vosburgh, which, you know, if Imperial Hint was not in the Vosburgh, I mean, that would be a bad allowance race. Not
well,
an allowance race, a bad allowance race.
Well, if he wasn't in, Steve, you'd probably have a different cast. I mean, I think you know, I think you would have had quite a handful more.
I don't know.
Different
is there anybody,
lineup.
Is anybody around? I mean, five out of his six opponents are former claimers, and the one that has been out of the money in his last three starts. So I don't know what sprinters there are in New York right now.
Well, they're going to go to the Phoenix. Wait till next week, and you see what the kind of lineup you get in the Phoenix.
Yeah, well, I mean, Shane, a lot of those are going to be Midwestern horses. I just don't know who are the top sprinters in New York right now.
Well, that's true.
I remember how impressive he was at Saratoga.
Yeah.
So he's got a number on all those horses.
Yeah, that's true.
I just don't know who's around. I mean, we've got a couple of hard, you know, maybe old hard knocking horses, but I don't know if there's any really brilliant sprinters.
No, that's fair. Well, we've lost, and there's been some, you know, there's been some retirements, and some of the ones that have that kind of, you know, fell by the wayside. I mean, obviously, promises fulfilled has been from the three-year-old front. He's been the major player. Mitoli is, well, he's sort of Midwest, but he's sidelined.
But he'll go dirt mile, right? I would imagine.
I don't know if he's ready. I don't even know. I don't know. I don't even think he's necessarily prepared to do anything. Mitoli. I'll check and see if he's working back.
Promises fulfilled.
Oh, promises fulfilled.
I mean, they could go either way with him.
They haven't decided either. That's correct. They haven't decided either. Bob Barron and
I mean, if you want to build your horse's reputation, this is the year to do it. When you have a one-turn mile, because this is the race that the breeders are going to pay attention to, you know, and not the phony miles that they run at San Anita.
I hear you, I mean, you know, boy, I'm just looking at my list here, and we've lost a bunch of these horses. B. Jersey retired.
I know. He just disappeared, which is a shame. I mean,
Army Mule is
another good horse. Yeah,
right. I mean,
who knows how good Army Mule could have been? He could have been, a super sprinter himself. The way he looked.
Yeah, it's been a little rough on, and then you had some of the ones that kind of got a little long in the tooth too in recent vintage. You know,
we'll have to see how Roy H bounces back. You know, he's run well, but you know, nothing outstanding. So we'll have to see how he comes up to the sprint. But it'll be interesting. I mean, there's going to be some really good horses that are going to be cross-entered, I would imagine, in the sprint and the dirt mile.
Well, it's Imperial Hint is the head of the class, no doubt. Steve, let's now dive in and spend a few minutes. Got about 15 minutes. Let's survey the divisions, and we can do it that way. We can talk Awesome Again, Jockey Club Gold Cup, Lucas Classic, and go ahead and take the reins and kind of walk through those three.
Well, the Jockey Club Gold Cup is a fascinating race because of the European influence here. I mean, I know Gronkowski's, you know, raced here, but he's, you know, he's still European background, and you've got Mendelsohn, who is how many 3 year olds can you remember that have made four transatlantic trips to the United States? You know, I mean, to come here for the Kentucky Derby, go back, come here for the Dwyer, go back, come here for the Travers, go back, come here for the Jockey Club Gold Cup. You know, that's kind of interesting. Do we really know what to expect from Gronkowski? Are we going to expect his Belmont or his Travers? Do we really know what to expect from Mendelsohn? You know, where he's going to be in the race? You know, obviously, he likes to be on or near the lead, but you know, with Diversify in there, you just never know. And then, of course, you know, you wind up with Thundersnow, and he's also going to be a big question mark. So, it's the main competition to Diversify. You know, are basically European horses, and I tell you one thing. Diversify, I mean, how many horses, by the way, do you remember, by the way, coming into this race, coming off of two 58-4 breezes, two bullet workouts of 50? So he's obviously extremely sharp. But, again, we know Mendelsohn has got speed, and they're going to probably want to use it. So he's going to be up there. I mean, I don't see Diversify opening up a big lead here, mainly because of that crazy horse inside of him, who's a pure sprinter, that, you know, Uno Mas Modelo. And if you look at this horse, I mean, you know, his last two races, he's coming off a 96 and a 98 Breyer. And, you know, he's owned by Luch Racing, so you know they're going to send him. He has no distance resume at all. You know, he's been a mile and 16th a couple of times, but he's coming off of a pure sprint. And not only that, by the way, but his last four races, he's been running either 44 and change or 45 and change halves. So how are you going to keep him away from the lead? And he's breaking right inside of Diversify. So what are they going to do? Are they going to take back with him? I know he's not a pure speed horse. You know, he did show speed when he stretched him out to a mile in the 16th. In his sprint races, he's come from off the pace. In one of the races at 7 furlongs, he was right on the pace the whole way when they went 45-4. But going a mile and a quarter now, coming off 6.5 and 7 furlong races, I mean, how do you not send this horse? I tell you one horse, by the way, that people are going to totally forget about, who I actually like in this race. I mean, this is a horse that I would definitely bet in here, and that's Patch. I think he's going to be totally overlooked. I mean, here's a horse we know he likes Belmont, and he ran a strong, you know, good third in the Belmont Stakes. After he ran in the West Virginia Derby, which he ran, you know, okay, a little bit disappointing running fourth. But he was out for 9 months, and they bring him back after off a 9-month layoff at Belmont Park, going a mile and a 16th, and he wins that race, comes from off the pace with a big stretch run. And I know this is a crazy analysis, and you look at the Foster and you say, God, he didn't run at all. Well, I'm just thinking, by the way, who knows how a horse with one eye is going to react to running at night with lights, and I don't know, who knows? I'm grasping for straws, but maybe he was just so discombobulated. You know, you got those heavy lights shining on one side of you, and the other side is darker. You're running at night. You know, one eye's looking at one thing, and one eye's looking at another thing. I don't know. Again, I'm reaching like crazy here. I'm just trying to figure out why he would just, you know, chuck it in that race and just not run. And even if it's a slight possibility, it's a slight possibility. He just did not like running at night under lights, you know, horse with one eye. So I'm going to throw that race out. Then he comes back in the Ali Sheba, mile and an eighth, and he closes well in that race. And, you know, he just gets beat a length. I thought he ran well. He got fanned extremely wide in there. He lost ground the entire way. He was probably 6-7 wide turning for home in that race. And I thought he ran well enough. And then the Woodward, which actually, you know, if you go by Discreet Lover, and all in all, might have been a better race than the Whitney, considering the fact that Discreet Lover finished a really good third in the Whitney behind Diversify and wound up finishing 12th. Got beat over 11 lengths in the Woodward. So the Wood, and if you look at the way they came home in that race, Yoshida came home 36 flat for the last 3/8, 12-2 the last 8th. Patch comes home 12-1 the last 8th. There's no way in the world he's going to win that race. You know, you're running in 14th. I mean, he's running dead last in a 14-horse field. And he gets beat 3 3/4 lengths at 37-1. You know, he's Union Rags out of an AP Indy mare. We know he likes Belmont. We know he likes, he's gonna love the mile and a quarter. I like this horse in here. I really do. Considering the fact, again, normally you look at Diversify, he's just going to go out and steal it. But like I said, with that Uno Mas Modelo inside of him, and you don't know how much speed Mendelssohn's going to show. I would imagine he's going to have to show speed. They're not going to try and come off the pace with him. So, you know, if they put enough pressure on Diversify, I mean, I would, you know, consider Patch a danger in here, picking up the pieces in the stretch, and he's going to be a big price again.
Interesting.
Do you give him any shot at all?
It's funny. I just hadn't really thought about him. My main focus has been seeing if I can determine what Violette wants to do in terms of letting the speeds that are on either side of him. I think you don't, you know, quote unquote take back, but I think they'd be quite happy to let Mendelssohn and Thundersnow go ahead and vie early in front of him and just sit, you know, tuck behind and you know, let those two go at it early.
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to run that way, his best races, you know, his best races have been on the lead. You know, the last time he came from off the pace, he just barely won in the state race. He can come from off the pace, obviously.
I think,
the last time he ran in the commentator, the state bred race last year, he also came from off the pace and got beat.
Well,
so
but
I don't know if he's as comfortable, you know, as he is when he gets brave on the lead.
Yeah, I hear you, but
you just don't know. You look at his buyer numbers, and, you know, they're significantly higher than anybody else, you know, including Patch. But I'm just saying, the way the race was run, and the way the post positions are, he's got two speed horses on the inside of him, and you know what happens when they break on that turn. You got to, you know, if you want the lead, you're going to have to really rush your horse out of there if you got speed inside of you. Because at a mile and a quarter with Belmont in that turn, even post six is considered an outside post. You got to push a horse because the horses on the inside have a big advantage by hugging the rail. So by being on the inside, you got to figure Mendelsohn is going to have to try and go for the lead. You know, the rail horse is going to take back, and Carlino and Gronkowski is definitely going to take back. So that's going to put Mendelsohn on the rail, and Uno Masmodello will be outside of him. And Ortiz is going to have to decide whether to go on with Diversify or get hung wide going into that little curve into the backstretch and wind up three wide going in there. So do you push him? But, I mean, if it's a competitive pace, if they go 46 and these horses hang around for a while and Mendelsohn runs a big race, and listen, Thunder Snow's got speed, too, if you want to use it. You know, he took advantage of a notorious speed-favoring track in Dubai, but, you know, he took the track from everybody in there. A lot of people thought, you know, West Coast was going to take advantage of that. He just took advantage of, you know, of the speed-favoring track and won off by almost six lengths. So, you know, they're going to have to push him from the outside. So I think Diversify is going to have some pressure put on him from the outside as well. Now, Diversify should get to the front and he runs a 46-4, 47 change, then the race is probably over. But if there's any kind of pace pressure at all, and, Diversify coming off of two very, very strong races.
Well, and he's been sharp.
He's
been very sharp. Yeah, he's been very sharp preparing for this. I mean, Dave Grenig's been tracking the works, and he's just looked, and you can just see that he's working like a metronome. I mean, he's sharp as can be.
When you put him back-to-back 58-4 breezes, I mean, obviously he's extremely sharp.
Without ask, too.
So the question is like the horse inside of him. So it was one thing coming off 58-4 breeze, but if the horse inside of you has been running 44 and change halves. and he's, you know, even, like I said, even that horse has run 98 to 96 buyers. So, you know, Lutz likes to see his horses, you know, be competitive the whole way. So I would imagine they're going to ask this horse to run. But I don't know. Right now, listen, if I was betting this race, I would definitely bet Patch, and I would probably bet, you know, Diversify on top of Patch. But I think Patch is a live horse in here.
I like it. Let's quickly hit the Lucas, where Mind Your Biscuits is auditioning for a possible classic try, and then some thoughts that you might have about the pair that end up drawing shoulder to shoulder at Santa Anita, where we've got West Coast and Accelerate. You've alluded a little earlier to it, but the other classic preppers.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know what Mind Your Biscuits' best races is. I don't know if he's he's going to be running. He's going to be running at 10 o'clock at night. You know, these night races sometimes they get kind of funny, and I don't see anybody in here that really looks like he should threaten him if he runs anywhere near the race he did in the Whitney. I don't really love anybody here. I mean, obviously, Honorable Duty ran a big race in the Foster, so we know he likes Churchill. We know he likes to run at night. He's, you know, he's run big races at Churchill, you know, throughout his career. You can definitely call him a house horse. You know, he's been doing all his workouts here, and you know, even going back to the last couple of years, he's been running quite a bit. So, I mean, he obviously looks like the horse he would have to beat in here. You know, a horse like Rated R Superstar, you know, he's capable of throwing a big race at any time, but, you know, his last three have been, you know, kind of uninspiring. The last two of them were on the grass, so maybe coming off the grass will wake him up a little bit. The big question mark, obviously, is going to be Toast of New York, and again, we got a major European influence here. I mean, here's a horse who was beating the nose in the Breeders' Cup Classic, which seemed like, well, it was ages ago. I mean, he said, let's put it this way, his race in the Breeders' Cup Classic was only three races back, and it was 4 years ago. So, you know, he obviously, you know, came back from stud after 3 years off, and, you know, won first time out on the all-weather, so which I thought was, you know, was quite a feat in itself. You know, then he ran the Pegasus and did not do anything, and he's been out since. So who knows what to expect from him? Are we going to see the Toast of New York that finished ahead of California Chrome and just got beaten nose by Bayern, that finished second in the Pacific Classic to Shared Belief? Or are we going to see the horse that we saw in the Pegasus, which obviously something happened to him there? But he's a fascinating horse in here. I mean, you know, listen, Jamie Osborne's a very good trainer, knows what he's doing. I don't think he would put him in here if he didn't think he was ready. But, I mean, to be away from the races for 3 years, that Breeders' Cup Classic was, geez, that's just a long time ago. But, again, you know, you got speed in here with Flowers for Lisa, so, that, I mean, that should set up very well for Mind Your Biscuits, with speed on the outside. Another horse that's capable of running a good race at any time is Breaking for Lucky. But he ran in the Lucas Classic last year and was the favorite in the race and did absolutely nothing. He was coming off, got beat a neck in the Woodward Stakes at 48-1. They make him the favorite in the Lucas Classic, and he never picked his feet up. You know, but then he comes back and he runs a big second to Gunrunner in the Clark Handicap. But again, that was 2 years ago, and he's another horse who's only had one start this year. He was turned over to George Weaver. You know, he's coming off a sprint race. I just don't know if he's ready here. I mean, I got to, you know, Mind Your Biscuits is an exceptional horse. You know, I would have to stick with him in here, and, you know, him and Honorable Duty look like the two solid horses in here. So nothing unusual, and certainly not going to find anything unusual in the Awesome Again. I mean, you talk about a two horse race. There really isn't much in here, and you know, if you want to I wrote a column over a month ago or so about the potential East West rivalry. You know, you got to Accelerate and Diversify. You know, never ran against each other. Both been running absolutely brilliant. Well, we do have a common bond in here in the Lieutenant, Justify's brother, who finished second, was beaten 6.5 lengths by Diversify in the Suburban, and then finished sixth, beaten 21.75 lengths by Accelerate in the Pacific Classic. So if you're going to use him as a gauge to those two horses, obviously Accelerate gets the big advantage there. But, I mean, listen, it's all between Accelerate and West Coast. If Baffert is right and West Coast is 80%, to me, I can't look past an Accelerate West Coast exacta. If Baffert pulls this off, coming off the Dubai World Cup, then I certainly will never, ever believe him when he leads you to believe his horse is on 100% ready. You know, it's Baffert, it's Mike Smith. You know, we know how good West Coast is. I think he's going to probably run better than people think. He's going to run better than a horse who's 80%. But, you know, running against Accelerate, that's a different story. He actually, his career high buyer is actually higher than Accelerate's 117 to 115. But I mean, Accelerate right now should be the winner in here, I would think. I mean, again, I never like to underestimate Baffert, but I'll listen to him, and I'm sure. Let's put it this way: if West Coast runs within two lengths of Accelerate, runs a good race, I'm sure Baffert will be very happy going into the Classic.
Yeah, and then finally, Steve, quick glance at the two-year-old. You got just a five-horse group, but game winner and Roatan back again. The filly race has got, feels like, you know, a little heavier hand between Bellafina, Durlu, Brill, and Mother Mother, four of them that feel like, you know, even with Bellafina having, you know, come out of the Del Mar Deb, it still feels like any of those four first of a couple of weekends here of two-year-olds.
Well, I texted Rick Hammerly yesterday after I saw the entries, and I said, where are your two-year-olds? And he said, well, Baffert's got them all, which is pretty much the truth. I mean, if not for Baffert, you got Jerry Hollendorfer, who obviously it was decided to put Instagram away. But, I mean, normally you would think a race like this, I can't keep up with the names of these races. I never know what race is what anymore out there. I mean, they just change these races at the drop of the hat. But I guess I like American Pharoah better than Front Runner. I mean, at least I set some kind of meaning. But, who can possibly beat a game winner here? I mean, it's Baffert. Hard to believe it's not Mike Smith, but you know, Rosario is on him. And I don't know how good Hollendorfer's other horse is, Gunmetal Gray. I mean, he was very impressive breaking his maiden. You know, it was not a fast time, but it was not a fast track either. And I thought he ran big. And this is coming after getting beat 10 lengths by Baffert's other horse, Roadster, who was supposed to have been the big horse in the Del Mar Futurity, and just obviously did not run his race. But I mean, you can't fault Game Winner. He looks like he wants to go on. Roatan is pure speed. If he can carry, I don't know if he can carry his speed a mile and a 16th. He couldn't carry it in the Del Mar Futurity, but you know, he went out there awfully fast, 45-1. Could not hold on, you know, barely held off Roadster for second. You know, didn't exactly run the straightest of courses in the stretch either. But, you know, in a small field like this, you know, the only speed in the race, he could love the two turns breaking from the rail. He could have a big advantage in here. You know, into Mischief out of an Indian Charlie mare, I'm not exactly looking him as a Derby caliber horse, but you know, he could be dangerous in here. But you can't go against Baffert. He just, you know, you can never go against Baffert. I can't see anybody else. I mean, Hefe, I have a lot of respect for Keith DeSormo, but he's obviously looking to pick up a piece of it. The horse is a maiden. He hasn't never been out of the money, but he's still a maiden. And and Sig Alert, he just didn't do much at all in the Del Mar Futurity, so he would have to, he had a little bit of a rough trip early, but he would have to improve dramatically. And, you know, Sadler worked him six furlongs. But to me, it's row eight and in front, and see if Game Winner can run him down. Like a Game Winner and Gunmetal Gray. But, yeah, Gunmetal Gray could be the sneaky one in here. So, I mean, you know, like I said, it's a five-horse field. There's not a lot of depth, but I don't think you're going to make a ton of money in here.
No, that's not the exercise. But we're putting them all together. And there is also, while we're looking ahead to the Champagne and the Breeders' Futurity and so forth, there is also, be aware of the two Florida sire races that have been known to send horses as well, including the likes of Awesome Feather. Steve, we got a lot. This is these are the first weekend, and next week we'll do some recapping and then look ahead to the next big round. Appreciate it.
Anytime, Steve.
Steve Haskin, everybody, and we're getting serious. We're going to have Tom Quigley next jump in and preview the Santa Anita season. Hammer, of course, tomorrow, but we'll start with Tom Quigley. Tom has got a lot of contest players to look after. We mentioned yesterday with Pete the sequence of five qualifying contest opportunities at Santa Anita, so we'll touch on that with Tom. We'll wish him a belated birthday. It was the other day, and we'll get back. We gave him the LoSalle season off, and he'll join us next. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.